This is the Jerry DePoto Show, presented by GEICO, every Thursday at 3:30 with Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Looking forward to it every week.
The latest transactions.
The breakdown on the Mariners' latest moves.
The reason behind the decisions that shape the organization.
I love the time together. It gives me a chance to hold myself accountable.
Now, here's Danny, Dave, and Moore.
We are very excited to have the general manager of the Seattle Mariners, Jerry DePoto, with us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Jerry, this is a rare 2 days off early in the season, but we get to bask in the glow of a 7-1 start. Your team's playing like something else.
Oh, we've been great. I can't say enough about the way this club has started the season and how exciting it's been for everybody. To go out and have a little fun. It's been that way since the day we left Peoria and we hit Tokyo, and it's gone on through this homestand and hopefully continues tomorrow here in Chicago.
Yeah, you know, it does totally look like everybody's having just a really good time, and I think that means something. The other thing, too, Jerry, you know, this is a former athlete. I mean, you come in here with a little bit of an edge. You know, you hear this talk that this team's not going to be good for a couple of years, and, you know, I feel like you got a bunch of competitors out there that have something to prove, maybe a chip on their shoulder.
Yeah, and I don't blame him for that. One of the things that, you know, and I think I have spoken with you guys so many times through the course of this offseason and into these early days of the season, and even just the mainstream media that we've dealt with, we kept trying to tell everybody we don't think we're going to be a bad team. We're not intentionally trying to lose here. And yeah. I don't know if anybody believed us. And, you know, I thought, well, I'm not sure that we're going to win 161 games. We certainly got off to a great start and reminded people that there's a lot of talent on this team. And, you know, our project or our our focus remains on the big picture. And this has been a fun step for us, no doubt.
Yeah, not 162, but 90, just 83 more. That's my prediction. That's all I ask, Jerry. Yeah. That's all I ask.
Hey, simple request. Simple request.
Jerry, yesterday I listened to The Wheelhouse with you and Aaron Goldsmith, and it was episode number 45. It's the first time I listened, and boy, I've been making a mistake because I really enjoyed it. I was out on a trail with my dog, and I was finding out little news and nuggets about the Mariners. And did we misunderstand this whole concept of it being a step-back season? Because it sounded like, from what you told Aaron yesterday, that maybe we did.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can only say what I've tried to portray for this project. And again, we're taking a big picture focus, but by stepping back, and what I referenced on The Wheelhouse is sometimes you can get lost in the forest and you can't see through the trees. And by stepping back, you get a broader perspective and see a bigger picture. And, you know, I used the phrase reimagination through the off season to illustrate that this doesn't have to be about tearing down to the studs and losing. We can reimagine our roster in a different way. And what you're seeing now is really the best outcome of that way. And, you know, while again, I wouldn't expect that we are going to be a 161 win team. And we certainly didn't come into this thinking that we were an odds on favorite to make it to the postseason. We didn't think that we were punting our 2019 season. We were just situating ourselves to be better as we move forward. And we anticipate that really starting to crest for us midway through next year. And if it happens sooner than that, sign me up. It's a lot of fun.
All right. Yeah. It sure has been fun. But if I was to give you a multiple choice question here with a one word answer, the 7-1 start for Jerry DePoto, are you surprised, shocked, startled, or flabbergasted?
Surprised. I always have to be surprised with a 7-1 start. It's the best start in club history. So anything less than surprise would be lying. But I can't say I'm shocked. We do have a fair bit of talent on this team. It's been a blast to see them all performing so well together.
We're talking to Jerry DePoto here, his weekly visit with us on 710 ESPN Seattle. Jerry, Domingo Santana is someone that you guys acquired, and in some ways, because Milwaukee had upgraded their own outfield, I think you guys had an idea that you were getting a pretty good player. But, man, his at-bats, he's a really patient hitter. He's got some pop, and he runs pretty well.
Yeah, Domingo's a terrific athlete. He's 6'5", roughly 235, 240, runs extremely well. He's got a double-plus arm on a scouting scale. And he's got huge power. I think you've seen it. He's the old major league movie with it's too high. Domingo hits the too high homer, and it just keeps on carrying. But we're really glad to have him. I know the Brewers, it's hard to really fault the Brewers. They added last year's NL MVP and, you know, Lorenzo Cain, who anybody would love to have in center field on their club, and they already had Ryan Braun, a former MVP. So it's hard to say they should have found a way to squeeze Domingo in. He just found himself the odd man out, and we became the beneficiary of that. And gladly we were the ones that were able to pick him up, because we feel like he really fits in here, both now and in the short-term future. He's under club control for another 3 years, and he's just 26. So hopefully this is just the start of what has a chance to be a long-term stay.
Jerry, we started the show by asking kind of what did we enjoy the most about this Mariners start. And for me, it's been Ryan Healy, because I think that we've seen the product of some of the changes he's made in the offseason, his ability to hit the breaking pitch. He's playing third base, which it's not like he's ill-equipped to do that, but he's primarily been a first baseman the past couple of years, and it seems like he's thriving. Have you seen a change in his approach at the plate?
Absolutely. And really, it's so – we talked about this last year with Ryan and to Ryan, and it's not that easy to change your approach and redefine who you are as a hitter. And I'm going to give Ryan Healy a ton of credit. He took it upon himself in the offseason to begin working with Tim Laker shortly before we actually hired Tim. So Ryan was actually working with Lake before he became our hitting coach, and just invested in trying to recreate his swing, and has clearly recreated his approach. His ability to focus on strikes, not leave the strike zone as frequently. And listen, every hitter chases some, but Ryan had a pretty big issue with the chase last year that he has figured out how to get under wraps. And I think that makes him the most notable of what is a handful of players who've made similar adjustments. And it's a small sample size, but I can't be more excited about one player's growth in the batter's box more than I am about Ryan Healy's at this point in the season.
Jerry, you mentioned to Aaron yesterday again in the Wheelhouse podcast about Ryan Healy having he hits better when he plays third historically. Why do you think that is?
I wish I could tell you. You know, my general theory is that he doesn't really think about the defense. He just goes out and he hits. But it's so much harder for him defensively at third base, or it's more of a challenge, that he has to think about the hitting, and that requires some of the thought to be taken away from his offensive game. And, you know, Ryan's he's a sharp guy. He's very thoughtful, and maybe spends more time being tough on himself than any player on our club, or really any player that we've had over the course of my time here these last 3 years. But, you know, Ryan is tough on himself, and perhaps the need to think about the defense a little bit at third base take some pressure off of him as a hitter, because it's pretty phenomenal difference what he's done offensively as a third baseman in his major league career, as opposed to playing first or DHing. It could just be a quirk, but it's more than a small sample size, and it's a clear difference. That's for sure.
Yeah. And Jerry, you mentioned the small sample size. It's just 8 games in, and I'm not much of a seam head, but last year, if I'm not mistaken, just Segura and Cano were the only two that had an on-base percentage of above 300. Now you've got eight guys, if you want to include the Vogel wagon there. So, and also, you know, you mentioned Domingo Santana. We'll get to the Vogel wagon later, but Domingo Santana, 11 RBIs, 6 walks. So you have eight players that are above 300 on-base percentage. And, I mean, is there enough there? Is that an indication that they're sort of winning the line of scrimmage as Scott Servais? How significant is that this early on?
Oh, I think it's very significant. The fact that we're ranking as highly, even in a small sample, as we are, it's really reflective of the quality of the players. And last year we did struggle to get on base. We did not have a good approach collectively, and whether that was a game plan or an individual skill set, what we did this past off season was we went out and targeted players who have this skill set. And you can go down the lineup. This is a skill set that Jay Bruce has, that Omar Narvaez has, that Ryan Healy is developing, Domingo Santana, Malik Smith, Mitch Haniger, Edwin Encarnacion, Vogie. They all do this naturally well. And, And the easiest way to do something better is just to go find players who do it better. And this group, you know, the last year's group was a fun and exciting offense that ran through hot and cold spells because of a flawed approach. This year's group has, they're more sound in their approach. I hope we're as exciting when we are at our height. We're proving that that is the case here in these first eight games. And hopefully we can sustain some form of this, because it really is an exciting thing when you can get on base, you can run, and you've got power. And we felt from the very get-go that we had all of those three traits. I don't know that we're going to score eight runs a game for the entirety of the season, but we do have that ability when we're playing at our best.
Jerry, Dave mentioned the Vogel Wagon, and that's the nickname. Should I take the blame for coining that?
Yes. You guys, it's very corny, yeah. So of course it was you.
Yeah. And,
play the sound effects.
Well, yeah. And we've come up with sound effects. So in an attempt to shamelessly rope you into this, Jerry, I'm going to ask you, for the theoretical Vogel Wagon, what would it sound like? Which of the following sounds I'll play is most accurately reminiscent of this theoretical Vogel Wagon? Would it be this kind of horn? Or perhaps it's this kind of a little bit more muscular sounding engine. Or perhaps something a little more festive.
Is there a general manager in the league that has to endure a more ridiculous interview?
Well, I haven't gotten to the one you suggested.
Yeah, I was going to ask the same question.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, Jerry.
We still have Fred Flintstone
but
on
yeah,
deck.
This is mine.
This is Dave's.
I'm going to go with a bit. Judging by the exit velocities of the two swings the other night, I'm going to take some kind of loud boom, whatever that sounds like. Maybe it's maybe the old Bugs Bunny cartoons with the bomb that explodes, but that's what his swings have sounded like. And if Vogey can do the things that we think he's capable of doing over the course of his career, he should be a fixture in our lineup for quite some time. He's a fun player to be around. He's got a great personality. He's got huge power. And he's got a built-in approach that really all the things that we've preached for the last three-plus years, Vogey embodies those. And we're really hopeful that he's able to get over the major league hump and that we can give him the opportunity to do that.
Well, that eighth-inning home run he had, if you took just a freeze frame of the moment that the bat hits the ball and where his arms are extended and the fact that he hadn't really gotten around on the pitch, it was good. He didn't break his wrists yet. And it still gets out, and that's some serious strength. Because if you looked at the freeze frame of that, I don't think anybody would think, "Yeah, you know what? That's a home run, slightly left center field." But he's got some tremendous power.
Yeah, I think that ball was a 20% launch angle at 107 miles an hour, and you know the 20% or the 20-degree launch angle, is you're not going to see that ball leave the ballpark very often, but. Vogey can really backspin a ball. And when you're hitting it that hard, 107 with crazy backspin, you don't see very many oppo homers at that part of our ballpark. And that was impressive. That was of all the long homers we've seen in the early going, that one stands as one of the more impressive just because of how it happened and when.
But, Jerry, what do you do? Because we talked to you down in Peoria, and you were saying that you want to get Vogel back as much playing time as possible and see if he can deliver at the major league level like he's done in the minor leagues. And yet, you've got Jay Bruce, you've got Edwin Encarnacion, and you've got kind of a logjam there with DH first base. How do you juggle that?
Right now, as we find out, and like we talked about in the spring, sometimes the baseball just takes care of it for you. Like, you know, in this particular instance with Ryan Healy having started the season at third base because Kyle's out for a couple of months, we had Encarnacion go down the other day with a bit of a sore wrist, and that bought Vogey a couple of days of regular at-bats. We're going to keep trying to get it in there, but you know, all of these guys are putting up the notable offensive productivity, and we want to make sure that we get Vogey. We went into the season with the goal of getting Vogey that 350-ish at-bats, and hopefully we can make it more than that. My guess is it might be more toward the back end of the season than the front end, but we're committed to figuring out where Vogey fits in our future, because we think there is a place for him here, and we've got to be creative in how we balance that out because the other players are quite good themselves.
Jerry, how will the on-field results and this early success, how does that impact some of the decision-making that you'll make as a GM with an eye toward the long-term future? Because you have to balance those, your long-term goals and the short-term realities. How will the on-field results affect your decision-making this year?
Yeah, I mean, you have to pay attention. Each team deserves for you to pay attention to their results. And you know, obviously this team right now is letting us know in a pretty loud way that they think they're better than maybe they were given credit for in the public view. But you have to pay attention. You know, that being said, one of the things that we committed to this past offseason and that we remain committed to is the idea of building for a longer sustained run than just trying to compete for a second wild card. Now, you know, that being said, if we get down to July and we're in this thing, I think we've shown that we're a pretty aggressive group. We're also pretty creative, I think. And my hope is that we're able to address some needs on this club and give this group as much a chance as they can, or as much a chance as we can, for them to win as many games as they can win without taking away from our long-term projection. Because we have restocked the farm. We are so excited about a lot of the prospects that we have coming, and we're not going to take away from that for one shot at a wild card. But we're not going to ignore it either. Everything comes with give and take, and we'll figure out how much we need to give and how much we should take when that time comes, or if it comes.
Jerry, if I had to, I guess, from my observations, pick who the leader is in the clubhouse. You know, you've got D. Gordon, who I think keeps everything light and fun, and then you know you got a guy who's super intense like Marco Gonzalez, which we just love. But how is that shaking out in the clubhouse as far as leadership goes?
Like, I think with most baseball teams, it is usually multiple players who combine to create a leadership group. Rather than just the one leader. So often we see it in other sports, whether it's, you know, football with guys like Russell or Tom Brady or Joe Montana in the day, who are just clear leaders on the field. In baseball, over the course of the 162, I think more often than not, it tends to be a group of players who tend to lead. And the guys I could cite on this team, you named a couple, particularly Marco among the pitchers, is so well put together. He very much believes in the direction the team has taken, and it is invested in what we're doing. And it also helps that he lives in Seattle and believes in the Mariners in this market. Mitch Haniger, Jay Bruce really stands out as a guy who has brought something big to our clubhouse, and couldn't be happier with the impact that Jay has made, really as much in the clubhouse and off the field as on. And I can say the same about the step forward that we've seen from D. Gordon. D is in a different place than he was last season, and you can see him taking a little bit more of a step out front in terms of his willingness to have those discussions with younger players or lead when the chance comes, rather than just show the energy. There's a lot of guys that are contributing right now.
Jerry, I'm just curious, I was thinking about it, about last year's team versus this year's team. And last year's team, I guess you could argue, was individually more talented, but this year's team collectively might be the better team. If there were a three-game series between last year's team and this year's team, who do you think would win?
Depends who's pitching. You know, I think if we have this team and the way they're playing together right now, that's what makes baseball teams great. You can have great baseball players that are enjoyable to watch, and we can pile up big numbers. And to be fair, last year in the first half of the season, we did those things and we played together. And that team was just as fun and just as exciting as what we've watched this team do over these front 8 days. But there's something about the way this team gets along, the way they enjoy playing together, the way they feed off one another, and really how they interact once the door closes or when they're away from the field, that stands out as special to me. And there's still so many of them that are so young, and they're going to play together for a number of years, and that excites me. And I guess I'll always take the team that I think has more team orientation, will do the small things to help the player next to him, and I think that's this year's team.
Jerry, we always appreciate the time. It's sure fun to watch your team playing and how they're off to this start, 7-1. We look forward to picking it up tomorrow in Chicago with that game, 11:10 Pacific first pitch. Thanks so much for the time.
You got it, guys. Glad to join.